Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Ian Matheson. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the City Archivist, and I'd like to welcome you to this little gathering tonight. We've called it an evening in the archives because on the fourth floor of the public library are the City Archives. And we've called it an evening in the archives because, of course, this is the evening time. Right. Right. First of all, I'd like to make a special reference to His Worship the Mayor, Mr. Paul Rieger, who has blessed us with his presence tonight. At this time of the year, he's really as popular as Father Christmas, going from one Christmas party to another. So thank you very much for coming to us this evening. We appreciate that. I'd also like to welcome people from the Co-op PDC Reunion Committee. If it wasn't for those people, we wouldn't have the display tonight, as I'll explain in a few minutes. And also, I must welcome people from the College of Education who have produced the video that we'll be seeing in a few minutes. The rest of you who don't fall within those three categories are here as distinguished representatives of the community. Many of you ex-councillors, others connected with the cultural activities of the city. I've tried to invite a representative sample of the city so that you can see what is happening up here and view this very interesting video. So thank you for coming, and I hope you enjoy tonight's entertainment. First of all, I want to mention the display, the Co-op PDC display. I want to mention for a moment why it is here and why it looks like it is. It's a rather strange display. Archivists usually don't like displaying original material. And you will see that there are some 400 original photographs there, which have been carefully covered with a plastic material so that people's little fingers cannot remove the photograph. If we had enough money, we would have liked to have mounted a much more sophisticated and professional display. But because of the circumstances, we mounted the small display. When the Consumers Cooperative Society, Manawatū Limited, went into liquidation in 1988, most of its archives were salvaged by Barry Parker, who is with us this evening. Barry was the last general manager of the society, and with brilliant foresight, he gathered together the records which were in the Co-op PDC offices and deposited them in the City Archives.
Well done, Barry.
2 years later, the receiver of the company also deposited other records which were still in the building. So the City Archives have a very comprehensive record of this remarkable organisation, the local co-op, which was really a cornerstone of Palmerston North's identity for many years. As you know, in every suburb there was a co-op shop, and two or three generations of Palmerstonians grew up thinking of the co-op as an essential part of Palmerston North's economic and social history. So we're fortunate that the records have been preserved, and they were deposited with the council in 1988 and 1990. Unfortunately, the financial situation of the archives didn't permit us to do much with them until this year, when certain members of the former staff of Co-op and PDC decided to have a reunion. And they came to the library and asked for access to the material. And this was rather embarrassing because it was all there in boxes, but it was totally unarranged and undescribed. And we knew that it included about 500 photographs of the organisation. And so Mr. Parker suggested that the reunion committee could produce some money to help with the ongoing maintenance of this collection. And I must thank Barry Parker for making this gesture to contribute towards the cost of those archives. And I must thank my boss, the library manager, Anthony Lewis, for actually finding money to do the preliminary work for the display. I don't know where he found it from. Probably from our salaries, vote. But anyway, money was found because in the last council budget, the total archives and heritage proposal was dropped by councillors, and we got no money whatsoever for our archive and heritage programs. So hopefully the next budget round will remedy that situation. So we were faced with the embarrassing situation of a community group wanting access to their records, but with us having no money to do to make them available. But that problem was overcome. Anthony Lewis found a sum of money. The co-op PDC staff have assisted, and we were able to mount the small display which you see. And here I'd like to thank Bruce and Diane Ayres from the reunion committee, who came into the archives on several occasions and helped us identify many of the photographs. And I'd like to thank Bill Roach, who can be regarded as the co-martua of the co-op. I had met Bill many years ago, but I didn't realize the depth of the man until he came to see me about the co-op. And I realized that in his memory, there was a great deal of very valuable information about the co-op during the 1970s and 80s. Bill was the share registrar at the co-op for 10 years at the end of a very successful banking career. So he came to the co-op and started a totally new phase in his life and was a very enthusiastic staff member. And then when he retired as share registrar in 1979, he stood for the board of directors and was elected and was also chairman of the board for 5 years. Five crucial years when the co-op tried to change direction. And Bill's stories about this period in the co-op's history I found fascinating. So I thought we must encourage him to record this. And so, Bill, I'd like to thank you very much for the effort you made to type out some 18 pages of your reminiscences of the 1970s and 80s. And also to thank you for recording those in a tape recording. And here I must thank Ian Johnson from Radio New Zealand, 2YM, who has produced the microphone in front of me tonight and is also recording this little function. Ian kindly lent us a very good quality tape recorder so that we could record the memories of Bill Roach and several other old identities of the co-op PDC at the time of the recent reunion. Someday the archives may have sufficient money to have its own tape recorder, but it's nice to know that we can rely on Radio New Zealand. Thank you, Ian. So this display has not just been an exhibition of existing material, it's given us the opportunity to create some other material for the future. And Bill Roach's reminiscences and the reminiscences of other people are now part of the co-op PDC record here in the archives. And this has been something that's been a pioneering venture for us. And trying to do it without any money has been quite a challenge. And I hope that in the future we'll be able to do some of these documentation programs with some properly funded budgets. So it's remarkable what you can do with enthusiasm of people like Bruce and Diane to provide information, and with Barry Parker and with Bill Roach. So without people like that, we will lose a lot of our history, because the archivist can't do it all by himself. It needs the support of the community, actively providing information to enable us to preserve a lot of our heritage. I'd also like to thank Barbara Olson, my archives assistant, who completed 99% of those panels by herself. I designed the display, but Barbara did the actual donkey work of trimming all the mylar and placing the photographs on the board and doing most of the captions. It took hours and hours and hours, and Barbara, I must thank you very much for that wonderful effort. So that is the story of that little display. I'm quite proud of it because as we designed it, I began to realize that the Co-op and PDC was a very, very important part of our history, and it's something that should be recorded in the city archives. So I'm glad that Barry and others had the foresight to save the material, and I'm pleased that we were able to present it to the former staff members during their reunion. And I hope that this activity and this evening tonight will help us develop that material for the future, so that in a few years' time and in another generation's time, there can be a larger and more comprehensive displays of what the Co-op meant to Palmerston North and Manawatu. So that's my part by way of introduction, and I would now like to call on Barry Parker to say a few words and to hand to His Worship the Mayor a small financial contribution towards this project. Barry probably needs a little introduction, but for those of you who don't know him, he was a director and chairman of the Co-op during its latter stages and was the last general manager of the Co-op PDC. And so he came to the society at a very crucial time in its existence, and his enthusiasm and drive were obviously very important factors of the Co-op's last 10 years. So Barry, would you like to come to the microphone and give us some of your memories of the Co-op, and we will record that for posterity. Thank you very much.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for those kind words, Ian, and thank you very much for making me feel like an historic relic. Many of you, of course, will remember the Co-op very well. Many of you will have been members. The Co-op itself started in the 30s at a time of when there was, of course, the Great Depression, and when co-ops were growing up all over the countryside and, in fact, all over the world. And the Co-op at that stage here in this town felt it was part of what was, in fact, a worldwide movement. And the Co-op started off from very humble beginnings, from a small group of people who rolled up their sleeves and who actually worked in a co-op shop in Broadway and who contributed a shilling a week to ensuring that the co-op got started. And from there it grew. And a large part of its growth is attributable to one person in particular, and that person is Gordon Brown, whose portrait is out there. And under Gordon's stewardship, the co-op grew, grocery shops developed all over this town, as far north as Taihape, down the Horowhenua, and through the gorge. And in 1953, the Co-op made a major step forward in buying the PDC and getting into a broader range of goods and services. At its peak, the Co-op had over 30,000 members. It had 22,000 people who had deposited money with the Co-op, and that was the source of the Co-op's funds. It didn't have a share capital as we understand it, though shareholders had in fact contributed £3 to what became $6. That sum only amounted to 138,000, but the vast bulk of the money was lent on deposit to the co-op. And that, as I say, came from some 22,000 depositors. At its peak, there was an investment there of some $30 million. The turnover was also about $30 million. And there was about 600 or so staff employed in that group. So it became quite a substantial operation. I suppose the co-op got into difficulties for a number of reasons. The principal reason was a thing called Rogenomics, not having a capital base. All its money borrowed, whatever the interest bill was, it was very significant. In the early days, we paid 4%, and 4% was a very good sum against what may have been 3% from the savings bank or from the post office. Sometimes that increased to 5 or 6%. But by the mid-1980s, 86, 87, that percentage had increased to 22%. And the other money that the co-op was borrowing from such organisations as the DFC were peaking at over 28%. So it made it extremely difficult for any co-op to survive. And at this stage, the consumers' co-op over here was the last of its kind in New Zealand. I think also there was a very significant change in people's attitudes towards a cooperative. There was an absolute need for cooperatives back in the 1930s. Prior to the welfare state and prior to many of the developments that we've seen in the last 50 years. But by the 1980s, people's attitude towards a cooperative was quite different, and offering a 5% rebate sometime in the future was not a very significant incentive for people to shop at a cooperative, when we all know that it takes a 10%, 15%, 20% or more off to get people to go and shop. So people's attitudes towards the cooperative had changed. It was no longer seen the same way as it was back in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. The funding problem was a very major problem. Fortunately, we had been successful in doing a deal with the Trust Bank, whereby the Trust Bank took over all the deposits of the consumer cooperative shareholders, and instead of having a deposit with the consumer's cooperative, those shareholders now had a deposit with the Trust Bank, which was a government guaranteed deposit, and it meant they had all the services and facilities that Trust Bank offered. So that ensured at least that when the consumer's co-op decided it could no longer pay that interest bill and asked the Trust Bank to in fact appoint a receiver, that there was no possibility of the depositors losing their money. They simply didn't have a deposit with the cooperative at that time. They did of course lose their $6, but that was all. So that's what happened, but it was a very substantial and a very successful operation for some 50 years. And with a membership of over 30,000, it meant that if you consider that there is probably only one member in each household, then most households in the city actually had a member of the Consumers Cooperative Society. So it was a vast network, and with a very high staff, of course, who came and went, a large number of people in the city had at some stage of their life been employed by the co-op. And so, and even when you look around the city today, you can see the effect of the co-op. There are many suburban shops. You can see the major redevelopment that's taken place over here. The fact that the car park is there at all, the fact that the plaza is there, is all the fact that the co-op existed. And if you look at that very large photograph out there, you can see just how much the cooperative changed that area up there. And a large part of that change took place after Gordon Brown left, and its chief architect was in fact Bill Roach, who did some very wonderful deals with certain organisations and companies, which in fact very much secured a major redevelopment in this area here. So it's a very big tribute to Bill Roach that area out there. When the co-op decided to go into receivership, as Ian has said, we felt it was very important to preserve those records. And so we started to scour the buildings that we had for these various records, and various people went into all directions. They seemed to go into roofs and into cupboards and behind cupboards, and we started collating everything in boxes in the boardroom. And what was quite a large room suddenly became very small as records came from all directions. And it was important to know what to do with them. So I rang Ian Malcolm, who at the time was the person in this library that I knew, and said to him, was it possible for them to come to the City Library? Was that the appropriate place for them to be? And he said they were, and that I could bring them round here whenever I liked. So 5 minutes later, I filled the car for the first time and started a shuttle service between here and what was our boardroom over the road in the PDC. So I'm very pleased that they came here, and it was exactly the right place for them to come. And what came over here, in fact, was every minute book from the very first meeting, every copy of the Consumer Times dating back, I think, to 1947, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photographs, and hundreds of miscellaneous items, some identified, some not. Many of the photographs weren't, but we grabbed them, we brought them across here. So 5 years later, we held a reunion, as Ian has described, and that provided the catalyst for doing something with all of these records. And the fact that something has been done is a tribute to Ian Matheson and to Barbara Olson and to the City Council providing the funds, wherever they came from. And I very much, and we all very much appreciate the fact that these records are being catalogued, preserved, put on public display. And I thank you again, Ian and Barbara, for all the work that you did. And as Ian has mentioned, an oral history is being prepared, and also a radio documentary. And the fact that those two things are occurring as well as looking after the records is also as a result of Ian Matheson's work. So I thank you for that as well, Ian. I'd like to think that that work continues, not just with our records, but with the records of other organisations within the city. And I'm sure it's a very worthwhile exercise. And as you mentioned, we held our own social at the time of the reunion. We made sure we put something on the price of the drinks and something on the price of the tickets. And we managed to make a profit of some $800. And so I have much pleasure in having turned that into a cheque to present to His Worship the Mayor with my thanks. Thank you.
All right, Bill, it's on the Bank of New Zealand.
Bank it quick.
What an unkind thing to say, Barry. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm just observing this machine here, and I've seen Barry Parker in a new colour tonight.
Not my usual one.
Not his usual colours, no.
It's the first time also, Mr. Mayor, you've been on a blue movie.
Well, now we've totally destroyed the... The recorder, we'll have to excise all this. I just want to respond briefly before I get down to the serious bits to Ian Matheson, of course, who was constantly referring to where the money came from. And of course, it did come out of his salary. But the fact that he wasn't sure indicates, of course, that we're paying him far too much anyway, because he doesn't really know. He's renowned, in fact, for having a go at us for not favouring the archives adequately. And, of course, it was no Freudian slip on somebody's part when he was recently reported as not as being the city archivist, but the city activist. And the 8 snide comments that he made tonight were all noted. but I can assure you, leave me quite unmoved. But what I do want to say is thank you. It's often a financially unrewarding task to take custody of archives. We had to sack 3 tenants, in fact, to get the stuff in that you've just wheeled across here. And it's cost the city a fortune. I don't want you to feel bad about that, Barry, because I want you to know we think what you brought across is very important. And I'm bound to say that the council is going to have to actually accord a different priority to these sorts of things. It's the most unusual thing about archives, of course, and until you've almost lost them, in fact, until you have lost them, you don't actually appreciate the significance that they were. And we just have to get a higher level of understanding and appreciation and take a deep breath and start providing bulk facilities in the first instance for just preserving them, and then we can let Ian Potter around with them at his leisure and at enormous cost later and perhaps not out of his salary, the actual business then of cataloguing them and knowing what's in them. But the first and crucial thing is to make sure that they are safe somewhere. Now, the city is pretty young, but there are so many other organisations, and there have been a lot of voluntary bodies, and there will have been different sporting groups that have gone out of existence, and we've lost all those archives. I had for years under one of my beds the archives, all the archives of JC since its beginning. Now, I have dutifully handed those across to somebody else. But when JC's from peaking out in the late 60s at a membership of 200 finally got down to 20, I have a very strong suspicion that nobody knows where any of those things are now. And all that recorded history is gone, including the minute books, which I'm so happy to know that we've actually got here. So I'm really am hoping that council will develop a different awareness to the urgency of preserving archives and perhaps doing a kilometre less a footpath or something to accommodate that fact. And I think, Barry, that this is far more symbolic of what you're proposing than the actual monetary portion of it. What it's symbolic of is the contribution that so many people themselves made at a social function for this purpose. And I'm delighted to receive it in the spirit in which it was given. So thank you very, very much for your incredible force. I'm not going to actually go back across and comment on the history of the PDC because I think that has been done very, very adequately. But I just want to now comment on the history of what happened when one person perceived the need to actually salvage all this. And we are incredibly grateful to you. And I believe, you know, in another 100 years' time, this will be so important, far more so than we realize now. So thank you very much. And I accept it with great pleasure on behalf of the city.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, for that reply. Well, that brings us to the end of the first part of this evening. We now change course somewhat and move to a video. And this machine that you've seen flashing away is in fact a video player that can project a picture onto the screen. So you're going to see a video tape. The connection between the video and archives is in the material that is used in the video. And I'd like to introduce to you Margaret Tate, a lecturer from the College of Education, to briefly introduce the video and then we will see it. So Margaret, would you like to come forward and explain to us the origin of the video? Thank you.
First, I'd like to introduce Murray Warne, who will be making this machine that's caused so much attention work in a few minutes. He is the technical producer, My part was to do the historical research, and so Murray's work was the camera work and all the technical side. And if some of you are especially interested in that, he'd be very happy to talk about that at the end of the program. So the this video that you'll see was first of all made for the Social Studies Teachers Association on the basis of one or two other videos which we'd made. And although it's been well received by schools, it's been a surprise to us to find how very well it's been received by members of the community. A lot have been sold, and there have been a number of public showings, and I think John Thornley is arranging some more for early next year. And what that pointed up to me was the a very high level of interest in history in this community, and I thought it might be worthwhile to run through some of the sources of the video as an indication of all the activity on which I had to draw when I was collecting the material. The first one, of course, is the Historic Places Trust, and it did seem to me initially very important for the children in school to recognise places in the city that had a historical significance, and clearly their work in putting plaques and giving information about it is really important, so you'll see some of those in the video. Then there's all the very fascinating preservation societies. The one that gave us probably most material was the Steam Traction Engine Society, but that's only one of the very many preservation societies, and of individuals like Cyril Syme, who has the Cobb & Co. coaches and the big Clydesdales and many other things, who was very pleased to take part in the video. This, I think, indicates the efforts of individual people for this preservation, and that there are a large number more than the ones I was able to use. Then, of course, there's the family history, through the genealogists in particular, but also many individuals who realise the worth of the material that they have in their houses. You'll see some paintings there. They are of the Anderson family, who formerly had a large house in Anderson Street, and so that family knows the worth of these early paintings and have them very well preserved within the family. They were very happy to make them available to us. And then there's the many people that do write their own histories. I was looking for a shape for this and came across the story of Matilda Montgomery, later Perrin, a family history written by an older local woman. And this exactly spanned the years that I wanted. All the details that were there came from the life history. The shape of the video comes from the life history of a particular person. I think too, one can look in any of the libraries here for the many, many things. Every time there's a jubilee or a centenary, it is recorded, and that's done very faithfully by many groups and is really very important to us in looking for things in local history. And then I have to make my about the WEA history group and the Scandinavian group. Many people who are beavering away at many aspects of the history. And in the next year, of course, there will be a considerable focus on women's history because of the women's suffrage year. Now, the point of all that is, that's all happening, and that's probably only a few of the many people that are occupied with history, but central to it, and as it's an evening for the archives, I certainly add my plug for the tremendous service that we get. The museum, the public library, where most of the photographs from this came from, and the archives. I could perhaps digress to tell a story of my attempts to find out something about the surveyors. I went down to Wellington, more or less specially for this, and went to Land Corp, where I understood the very interesting notebooks that the surveyors are kept. And when I went there, I asked the young woman behind the counter tentatively about looking at them, and she said, well, you have to know the year and the month, you have to know the map reference, every single search is going to cost you money, and I go off at 12, and which exactly at 12 she did, more or less in mid-sentence. Now, the point is, a greater contrast with the tremendous service that we get here, where people go out of their way, they know their stock well, and go out of their way to make it accessible to people, and we're very glad to have Ian's encyclopaedic knowledge of local history, upon which all the groups I've mentioned depend so heavily. To many people here, you've come because you're interested in history, but I thought I would say to perhaps those to whom this sort of fervour of interest is a bit unfamiliar, to say, why do people do it? And it seemed to me there were a couple of things. One, it creates a sense of belonging. People feel that they actually do belong, not only to their family, to their forebears, but also to the city. And I think that's something which is important, and which I think any of our city fathers and mothers, if we might say, should indeed be concerned about, because this is creates a real pride when you feel that you belong to it. And as I began to find what was the story of Palmerston North, I felt an increasing pride. There were a lot more comfortable places to be than Palmerston North in 1870. There were big cities around in New Zealand. People were pretty hungry for land, and they came, say, to the swamps and the bush here and had a truly terrible time at first. But the most remarkable thing was how quickly they got the bridges and they got the transport. Within 20 years, things had changed totally. A tremendous, tremendous achievement. And I think the other thing is, people say, you know, happy is the country without a history. There weren't any earthquakes. There weren't any wars. There was a peaceful history in Palmerston North. There was a cooperative history with the Rangitane people. And it seems to me that all those things add up as something to be very proud of. And at the end, I came to perhaps see the history as some of the pioneers did, an attempt to look for a better life, a determination to achieve a better life, and in fact, that was what they did achieve. So I think all those things give some sort of reason, as I say, for the people that want to follow the history, preserve it and tell it. We do thank the council for all that they offer in this way. I have to take up Ian's point of saying, while it is wonderful what they do, perhaps we hope they will go on doing it, maybe even do more. indeed, what has been done, and I would very much like to present a copy of the video and to thank you.
Well, once again, I've had the privilege of a sneak preview of the particular tape. And nobody here, no, that's all right. I'll just put a check up. No, that's all right, I can say it. We had a much heralded video of Bellamy over Manawatū. Now, that had a certain value in a certain area, but this thing has, this particular production has an interest that transcends that in a way that will appeal greatly to the average Palmerstonian. It is just full of little wee cameos of little bits of Palmerston North, and anybody my age can actually relate to some of them. It doesn't actually go down terribly far into modern history. For a young child, they will look at it and really think, gosh, is this the place where we're currently walking up and down streets? I mean, they'll find it a bit difficult to believe that the place was ever like this. But it's incredibly important now to have assembled this, because the longer people are getting around to making the production of these things, of course, the far more difficult it's going to be to actually do it. And if we let another 50 years go by, it'll be almost impossible. So thank you, Margaret. It's been a great... I mean, you might have done this to suit a particular purpose, but coincidentally, I believe it is going to serve another very, very worthwhile one too. And all I can do is compliment you, as you will all agree when you finally get to see it. And there's Rangi there in film star mode, and he's signing autographs afterwards for all those interested for a fee. And I think you'll really will enjoy this, and I'm just so happy that one will at least go into the city archives. Maybe we're going to have to get more of our material in this form, because with these new modern gizmos, of course, you can actually get to see it instead of having to thread film and all that tedious business that we once had. So it's marvellous. Thank you, Margaret and Murray, for the production. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And we're going to be very grateful to have yet another little snippet of our history encapsulated in this very, very professional way.